At this point, it's going to be weird not to talk to the world's Carolyn Beeler in Antarctica. She's been there for almost 2 months, reporting back to us from on board a research ship full of scientists studying the effects of climate change on glaciers. And now they're headed back to port in Chile. So, Carolyn, this is going to be our last chat while you're on board the Nathaniel B. Palmer. I got to say, I'm going to miss checking in with you down in Antarctica. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I am excited to get home, eat a giant salad, and go for a run. And it also feels a little surreal to be heading back to Boston in the office and seeing everyone again. It kind of feels like this is just my life now. So it's kind of strange that it's going to be ending in a handful of days.
Well, you'll be happy to see that none of us have changed.
I hope everything's the same when I get back.
What is the mood on board as this voyage wraps up?
People are definitely excited to be heading home. I asked some of the scientists down here what they are most looking forward to about getting home, and University of Alabama PhD student Victoria Fitzgerald was excited to see her 10-month-old daughter.
I left and she was barely crawling, and now she's like standing up by herself and stuff.
University of Gothenburg researcher Alexandra Mazur is looking forward to some uninterrupted sleep at home.
In complete silence, no voices, no ice hitting the ship.
That ice can be pretty noisy hitting the ship. And Peter Sheehan from the University of East Anglia is looking forward to a couple of the little things in life.
I'm looking forward to a glass of wine. I'm looking forward to my own bed again. I am looking forward to just, I suppose, just those little things like cycling to work. Those kind of little routines of daily life that you don't really realize that you'd miss, perhaps, until you don't have them anymore.
So when we spoke just before you left, Carolyn, one of the things you were worried about was going stir-crazy or feeling bored on the ship. Did that ever happen?
Oh my gosh, that was not a problem at all. There was so much going on the ship, 24/7 literally, that I wanted to cover, that I needed to learn about. I've watched half a movie while I've been down here and read a couple of books, but really there's been almost no downtime.
Did you develop any new daily routines that you think might be hard to kick when you're back in Boston?
Oh, that's a good question. I will miss going up to the bridge in the evening and just looking out at the natural beauty and whatever we're passing.
So it wasn't like the astounding beauty of these glaciers ever got ho-hum for you. It wasn't like, oh, there's another mammoth glacier. Eh, whatever.
No, it wasn't. And everything looks different. I mean, every iceberg is unique, like every snowflake is unique. And, you know, I've seen humpback whales breaching. And the other day we saw a giant group of seals swimming, which was something I hadn't seen yet in such large numbers. There were hundreds of them. So looking out the window never got boring or blasé.
So, Carolyn, I'm always kicking myself when I go somewhere new and I've neglected to bring that one key piece of gear. Is there something you really wished you'd brought with you but didn't?
I would have brought my big puffy coat from Boston because parkas are part of the standard issue that you pick up at the warehouse when you're getting ready to deploy. And the folks at the warehouse were telling us, no, you're okay. There are coats on the ship. But what's on the ship are these float coats. So they're coats and flotation devices in one. So they're very hard to like move in. They're very bulky. So I wish I would have had a regular coat that I could throw on whenever I wanted.
So one more listener question for you, Carolyn, that I understand you've been working on answering. This question comes from Jen Kramer, who listens to The World on KUT in Austin, Texas. And Jen asked how the scientists on the ship deal with the emotional impact of their work on climate change.
Yeah, that's something I've been asking people for the past several weeks, and I put together a little report on it. And I was actually surprised by the range of reactions I got. Some people said, you know, they weren't panicked by climate change. They were more professionally curious. Other people did give answers I was expecting a bit more, like they found it daunting or depressing. That was the word that Guy Bortolotto used.
When I think about everything, not only climate change, so when I think about all the issues that we have, I get a bit depressed, really.
He's a marine ecologist at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, and he is particularly worried when he thinks about his 2-year-old son.
We still have that feeling that he just arrived in this world. And when my wife and I, we talk about this, we're like wondering if he's going to be happy with all the issues that the world has.
He also worries about the fate of his hometown. He's from a low-lying coastal city in Brazil. But he says he's really careful not to let these feelings interfere with his work.
When I'm doing my job, I'm not thinking that my hometown will be underwater. I'm thinking that this is a global issue that I need to help to understand.
That's the kind of thing I heard from nearly everyone down here. For activists and policymakers, emotion can be a really important way to spur people to take action on climate change. But these scientists are trained to put their emotions aside so they don't cloud the analytical thinking that's central to their work. Here's how Alexandra Mazur, who researches sea ice at Sweden's University of Gothenburg, put it when we were sitting on the floor of her cabin.
I'm just trying to be very neutral to analyze the results properly, because if you include emotions into that, then you're biased.
Back at home, some people say they feel helpless when they think about climate change, but that's not something I heard down here. And I think that's at least partly because the scientists here feel like they can actually do something about climate change by studying it and helping figure out what lies ahead. That's part of what motivated Rachel Clark to start a PhD at the University of Houston.
If there's an issue, I don't like belaboring how difficult it is. I just want to find a solution. So maybe I just sort of transfer my emotions into action when it comes to climate change.
Getting a PhD in geology and shipping out to Antarctica is clearly not how everyone's going to cope with their feelings about climate change. But Lars Bouma's strategy, that might be a little more doable.
Going outside, appreciating every day.
And he says that helps, sometimes.
And then you have moments where you listen to news and you hear a change in policies and you think, like, why are they doing that? We know better. And that's very depressing, I think, as a scientist. And then you go outside and have another walk and then you worry about your children and what you leave them. And it's just up and down all the time.
Scientist Lars Bouma there talking about the emotional ups and downs of climate change research. So, Carolyn Beeler, as I said, you're coming back to Boston from Antarctica. How has this trip impacted you and how you think about climate change?
I'm thinking about two main things right now, Marco. The first is how difficult it is to know and gather data about climate change in places like Antarctica. You know, it took 7 years for the scientist Anna Volin to get the robotic submarine that she just was able to send down under the floating shelf of Thwaites. It takes, you know, a full day sometimes to find a seal to put a tag on that will track ocean temperature going forward. So it takes a lot of work to get this really good data that will help us figure out what's coming in the future. And the other thing that I've been thinking about is once the scientists on this ship write up the findings, write up the data that they've gathered and publish it, what happens next and how we use that information is not up to these scientists. It's up to policymakers and the public. So I've been thinking a lot about what needs to happen next if this information is actually going to have a real-world impact and help people better prepare for the future.
The world's Carolyn Beeler from the Southern Ocean, now heading to port. Carolyn, can I just say it has been great living vicariously through you for these past couple of months. And enjoy your first salad back.
Thank you, Marco.